day yesterday.
Really?
Yeah,
he's
getting
her a cat. Yeah, she's in my house, too.
She's adopted us in this block.
Yeah, she's everywhere.
Well, where was she before 2 weeks ago? It's like you can't remember. I never saw her.
She came up to my office.
That's Darlene's cat.
Well, I know it's Darlene's cat.
She's
why
did
she suddenly appear?
She's coming out.
Rachel left a year ago.
Well, she just got the news.
Yeah, she's a little slow.
No, Boomer's
she's
not.
Bizarre.
Boomer's not doing something.
Something changed.
Something changed.
Yeah.
Just do the
boomer.
Can't get rid of her. She came in the office yesterday.
Yeah, she scared the crap out of me the other day. She jumped in my lap when I was sitting there in the morning reading the paper.
Well, she was over at the house already.
Yeah, she's come the last couple of weeks quite often to see. She comes into my house. All right. This is the next couple of verses. We're starting chapter 10, so. This is a red letter day.
This is where we're going to finish Ecclesiastes by Friday.
Shut up.
Hey, I had a bet that you wouldn't make it through 8.
You wouldn't?
Well,
this is one of my favorite scriptures. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor.
That's the apothecary.
Drugstore, drug place where the thing is made.
Oh, okay. Apothecary.
Now.
Perfumer, perhaps.
I thought it was pharmacy.
It means something that it's different than it looks like it means. And it says that there's a bunch of different interpretations. We're going to look at a couple of them.
Well, apothecary.
Huh?
This is verse.
Apothecary.
Verse.
Okay. I'm down with that.
This speaks of Korah and Dathan. Let's go to number 16. Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan, and Abimaran, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben, took men. Now, it's important to understand that Korah was a priest. He was of the tribe of Levi. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, You take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them also. Wherefore then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? When Moses heard this, he fell on his face and rent his clothes, etc. But the same word that's used for to make something fetid or rotten, or in this case, causeth the ointment of to send forth a stinking odor. The same word is to use vile language, and that's why this is what it is. And the vile language isn't saying God damn it. The vile language is speaking against the order of God. And so they said before, they had previously said Moses is a prophet, Aaron is a high priest, and the Torah is from God. Now, the little folly, as they're saying, Moses is not a prophet, Aaron is not a high priest, and the Torah is not of God. And so what happened? Go to Numbers 16:30. And he gave them chance after chance to repent in the rest of chapter 16, if you remember. But then in chapter 30, or 29, excuse me, 28. Hereby. And Moses said, "Hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of mine own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth, and swallow them up, with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord." Now, the folly was, and again, this isn't really talking about whether they're speaking against Moses, but I want you to see this in speaking what's in the New Testament, to see how important this could be. Jesus Christ said, "It's finished." It said of him by Paul that by one offering you have been perfected forever. It said that you own all things, that all things exist for your sake. It says that all things reveal Christ. So the little folly here is initially maybe a wisdom. God is real and I've accepted him and I commit my life unto him. But then something comes up and your mind says something is wrong. I've got to take action. So the folly, really what it means, the word folly, the root word just means of the flesh. It means if you started out in the spirit and you return to the flesh, then you are speaking this folly, and what it says of it is true. The dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly, i.e. returning to the flesh, of him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. Can you see that? Do you really understand? Because when we deny that it's finished by saying we have something to do, when we deny that you've been perfected by one offering by saying, "Oh, all this stuff is wrong with me," then you participate with Korah and Dathan into this folly. And this is why this becomes so important and that the reading is so critical in order to enter the eighth day. Now, it gives several other examples. Doeg and I'm just going to read them here. Doeg and guy I can't pronounce, in 1 Samuel 22. They spake of David, saying he comes from a disqualified family and should not be king, because he's from Ruth the Moabite. So their folly caused David to write this Psalm 55, which talks about they are going to go down into the destruction of the pit. Another interpretation is the dead flies are the generation of Elijah, who had one time thought Elijah was the greatest prophet that had ever lived. He was wonderful and everything. And then, go to 1 Kings 18 and see this real quick. In 1 Kings 18, verse 26. These men had been the followers of God, but they became the prophets of Baal. And so, in verse 26, they took the bullock which was given them, and they dressed it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, even until noon, saying, "O Baal, hear us." But there was no voice nor any other answer. And they leaped upon the altar and which they had made and did all kinds of other stuff. And what happened? The fire came down and destroyed them. And why this is so important is that if you can hear, it'll cause you to know the fear of God. We are like drug addicts, each one of us. We are so addicted to self that if we return to self, to self-interest, even for one split second, then we're in danger of being as the dead flies that cause the ointment to become fetid, or that we return to the folly. The folly isn't, ha-ha, I'm making fun of you. The folly here is that you've returned to the flesh. Now, if this happened to those who were only the type, to show the type, how much more will it happen to us who've seen the finishedness? Who've said, maybe hundreds and hundreds of times, Father, I'm yours without condition. And all of a sudden, something happens and you return to self. You have to come to this fear of God that says, there is nothing in the universe. I fear this mystery so much. I respect it so much that there is nothing on the face of the earth, above the earth, or under the earth that can cause me to return to my own understanding ever again. Can you see the importance of this?
I'm thinking of the sweet savor of Christ. That's sort of a similar metaphor, but that screws that up. It's no longer a sweet savor of Christ. It's
right. It becomes what all of you have experienced. You've gone from periods of perfect understanding, then something transpired, and then there was nothing but doubt and fear. And you don't even consider repenting of that state, because the first thing that happens is, this is the reason, therefore I have to do this. And Harry just experienced this on Saturday.
I did last
Sunday. Huh?
I did last Sunday too.
Can you understand why this is so critical? Anybody not understand it? All right, let's go look at another one. The next verse. We could spend the rest of the day on just examples of, since we're speeding on ahead. Verse 2. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart makes him left-handed. No, that's not. I'm sorry, Harry. I couldn't resist. But a fool's heart at his left. Now, universally, they all say this returns to this mystery, which we all must see what it means, of Abraham and Lot. Let's go to Genesis 8. I think. No, Genesis 13, I'm sorry. Abraham and Lot had both become great in terms of the number of possessions and cattle. And so, let's read it. Let's start in verse 1 to 13. And Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abraham was very rich in cattle, in silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, and to the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And then Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went up with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that it could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abraham said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between thee and me, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt, take the left hand, and if thou wilt, go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. The mystery of all this is you've got a picture where this was in the promise. Abraham and Lot are standing. To the left hand was this incredible valley. The valley where the Jordan River went through. It was alleged to be more beautiful, or at least as beautiful as the Garden of Eden. To the right was the desert and the barren rocks. And Lot, after the flesh, after his own sight, chose to go towards Sodom, to the green, verdant valley. Because then the Jordan River ran all the way from its source, all the boundary, the rushing river, all the way down to the Gulf of Aqaba. I couldn't say it for a minute. And all of that area was well watered and green and verdant. Well, what's there now? The Dead Sea, the lowest part. So we will always think we are going to choose something after our understanding, which always means and signifies that you're going to the left, as opposed to going to the right, which may be apparently towards suffering or towards what doesn't appear to be the best thing to do by any concept of the mind. Does this grab you like it does? I mean, these are really important concepts that are so revealed over and over and over and over.
My response to that is that's a darn good example of why I don't want to make a decision.
Right.
Because you'll make the wrong decision.
Yeah. Can you see it, how it will affect you throughout everything? Because you're going to always choose after your own eyes of understanding. And that will always bring you towards some place that your mind and your flesh says is good. And that's what that means. It doesn't mean that we should pick on Harry because he's left-handed. The symbolism is that to go to the left is to go away from suffering towards that which is to the eye pleasing and wonderful. I want you to be honest with yourself. Haven't you spent most of your life going to the left, choosing after your own understanding, that which seems to be the best, as opposed to what Abram did and what is the whole wandering of and later now with Moses in the wilderness was they didn't make a decision. If the cloud was down, there was doubt. They had more than one choice. So they stayed. They remained in the tent. Let's look at that so we can see it cemented. Numbers 15, is that what it is? Or 9? Numbers 9, I think.
Leviticus 9?
Numbers. Numbers 9, verse 15. Now this is the reading on the Feast of Tabernacles, one of this, because it was the day the tabernacle was raised in the wilderness. Verse 15. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. At evening there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire, until the morning. And so it was always. The cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. Now, to me, to what I believe and what I've taught for 30-some years, is that the cloud in you as the tabernacle is if you have more than one, if you have to make a choice. If there's a choice to be made, you do nothing. And the cloud is, as it were, the doubt. The fire is always the perfect guidance of the Holy Spirit. So, and remember, there's a principle of exegesis, a biblical interpretation, that says if a scripture is repeated, I mean if a thought or a concept is repeated two or three times in a short space, you must really, really, really listen. Well, just now consider how many times this idea of the cloud and the fire was repeated. This isn't a fairy tale. This isn't something that they didn't have some magic little thing that guided them. It was this same guidance that you have, the cloud and the fire, the doubt and the clarity, the doubt and there's no decision. Is this coming together a little bit? All right, let's watch. And so it was, verse 16, so it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. When the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. And that's called the commandment of the Lord in the next verse. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed. And at the commandment of the Lord, they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. They entered the rest. This is the rest wherewith you may cause the weary to rest, but they would not hear. But the word of the Lord continued to be upon them, line upon line, precept upon precept. When the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. It makes no sense to anybody's understanding. If you have more than one option, you do nothing. You wait. And so it was when the cloud, and verse 20, and so it was when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents. And according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was when the cloud abode from evening unto morning, that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were 2 days, or a month, or a year, or 39 years, that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereupon, the children of Israel abode in their tents, and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. The same phenomena exists for you and I today. If not, if we're still running around after our own understanding, making up crap and putting God's name on it, then we're still back in Egypt, hiding under the blood. But once you've crossed it by baptism, once you've done that, then your journey must not be according to folly. The folly of returning to the flesh. The folly of going towards the left hand. The folly of choosing something that you think is going to benefit you. You keep the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by that which each of you have. How many times do you rise above the cloud? You force a decision. read, let me reread the couple verses. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Yea, also, when he that is a fool walketh by the way. Well, we didn't read there yet. This is, I mean, to me, these last few, this last couple chapters, last three chapters, really, of the book of Ecclesiastes, are what is absolutely pristinely necessary to enter and to celebrate with any kind of understanding the eighth day Feast of Tabernacles. Anybody have any response?
It's like you've said a lot recently, you never going to make a mistake by ascribing too much to Christ or suspecting yourself too much. It's like you're never going to make a mistake by waiting for clarity or by preferring another's interest over yours.
You'll always make a mistake. You're always this lot when you choose to go towards what you think is your right or your benefit or your... And this is most clearly seen in the day-to-day personal relationships. Why?
That's how you catch fish. You put the bait on the hook. Put it in the water and let the fish go after what it thinks is good for it.
What are you thinking about, Mr. Wade? Where's your roommate?
Which one?
Dana.
No.
Scott.
Scott's staying with you?
He moved into the Blair house.
Back house. Oh.
For a few days.
The dead flies were... Never mind. All right, take it, big guy. I'm tired of talking.
Yeah.